for those who didn't hear it, that the one router one will be taken because it matches only up to the 24 bits. And so the longer the way down the chain, the more easy it'll be to get to the router, so that the longer addresses will go to there. And that's what's called variable length subnet masks. So any network can have any number of, you could have a /24/25 for the any number of bits. So you can see how your networks can be completely aggregated or stuck together. Mobility, one of my favorite topics, the ability to move from one to another. We've got mobile IPv6, which is IP for mobility. They've actually got mobile IPv4. They've done experiments on it. They've got mobile ad hoc networks where a bunch of us get together with our laptops and turn them on, and with infrared wireless links, we now have a system set up to play whatever game we're playing just by turning it on. The computer should be able to. That's what they want to do. You should be able to turn it on and have everybody see who's out there and go from there, but not just in a room, but anywhere. So if there is a router port or a network access point in the corner, I should be able to turn on my machine. It should be able to say, wait, there's a wireless link in the corner. My IP address is this, my nearest router is this, and automatically configure the computer to go with that. My concern is, while I went to an IETF meeting in Washington, D.C. once, and they kind of like, well, we'll put off security toward later. And that's what really concerns me, is these same attacks have been coming over and over, and you know that this is going to be a problem. But for mobility, they've got address space now to move around. You don't have to keep just one IP address. You could have any number of IP addresses, and anything can be on the internet now. Co-located means that it's going to another place through agents. Neighbor discovery is what I talked about there, about being able to just turn it on, figure out what the prefix is, what the MTU maximum transfer unit, figure out the hop length. Duplicate address detection, you know, is my box already out there? Does somebody already have my IP number or not? And stuff like that. So I've kind of answered the questions of what it is, and now trying to figure out, well, who's using it. You know, I like my IPv4. I don't care. But you know, right now it is in universities. It is in research institutions. People are starting to come around to testing this out. And I'll go through later what the mechanism is, how we are going to transfer over, what the plan is. There are IPv6 stacks out there for Unix and Windows 2000. They had said at one point they wanted. Does anybody know whether that'd be in there or not? I don't know, but they're trying to establish it in there. In fact, one of the ways to get transition is to use dual stacks, dual IP stacks. But that's on the next slide. So there's a couple ways. How would we transfer this over? How would it work? Well, there's the 6-bone, which is similar to the M-bone, the multicast backbone. If you hop on and you want to see NASA's space shuttle downlink, you can get an address on the M-bone and go through that. But they've got different islands of IPv6. You know, University A has an IPv6 network. University B has an IPv6 network. And they want to talk to each other over the global IPv4. So they use, through the IPv4C, they connect it through gateways, which translate IPv6 to IPv4, you know, unwraps the packets and packs it back up and sends it across. You can either have dual stacks, which are one machine, you have two different stacks to handle the packets. You know, if an IPv4 packet comes in, it knows that. If it's an IPv6 packet, it goes with that. Or you can have tunneling, which they place one packet inside of another. Just like you encapsulate the TCP inside of an IP, you encapsulate an IPv4 packet inside of an IPv6 packet. This can be done, but it's inefficient because now if the only way I can reach the other IPv6 is through these sets of tunnels, where it may just be the machine right next door, and I may have to go all the way around the internet to find my next door machine. It's inefficient, but they're trying to put it together. Okay, well, that's a general overview of IPv6, and I'll come into more detail later. But let's switch gears here and talk about DEF CON's about security for IP. Now, IP security, some haven't heard of it, IPsec. They've got different headers, different you have an authentication header and an encapsulating security payload. Actually, this will work for IPv4 as well. But for IPv6, authentication is required for every transaction, except when you put in like a null authentication, which I didn't figure that one out. But they put security associations and tells which, you know, this machine is using DES to talk to this connection. This machine, you know, we're using IDEA to talk to this machine. And Belevin wrote a paper a couple years ago which goes through, and they fixed a lot of the problems that he mentions, but problem areas for the IP security protocols, and the reference is in the back. But the IETF had IPsec working on it, RFC 1825, 1826, and 1827, various crypto techniques to put it in there. You can use the reason why they have, you may ask, why didn't they just have a crypto header? The reason why is because when they developed this, some countries would allow authentication. You know, I am really Dr. Byte coming from Las Vegas, but they wouldn't allow encryption through their country. So you could have it so that people could just use authentication, or you could use authentication and encryption, or you could just use encryption. But that's why, the selected use of it. A little bit about the authentication header. Go read Atkinson's RFC. Basically, a base level is MD5, but you can add other stuff in there. They've got, for those security associations, you could say, well, I'm using, you know, this type of authentication protocol, or even a new protocol has been developed, and you just stick it right in there. I'll show you the header format in a later slide. DES is the CBC, is the ESP base thing, but we can stick in any other kind of encryption on there. So this is the header format ripped out of the RFC, where everything is based off of header chaining. The next header is this, that, and the other. There's a listing. Well, it was through IANA, the Internet Assigned Number Authority, but now it's gone up. Postel has passed away, so they shifted it over to somebody else. But there's different things, the length of the header, the different types of authentication. Your index is basically a 32-bit number as to, like, this machine, you know, you can have up to, I guess, 4 billion connections that says, you know, connection number one has got this type of authentication header, so it knows which connection is going to which machines. That's one thing, host-based authentication versus user-based authentication. If I have a host-based authentication where my machines are talking to each other, then there's lots of attacks you can do, and Belevin describes those in his paper. Dr. Belevin describes how you can, if you're using the same key for everybody on the same host, then there's attacks that can be done. But for the most part, that's the AH or authentication header, which is used in anything. It's coming along. Our ESP or encapsulating security payload is done with just another security association and just various sets of data in here that may have keys and other such stuff. I have a feeling I forgot to put in the next header chain, but for the most part, that's that. So what is this security association that I keep talking about? The security association is, what kind of security are we going to have for this connection? Let's make like a record or a structure or whatever else you want to call it, an aggregate of different data that says what security we're going to use, what authentication method, what authentication keys, which encryption method are we going to use, and which encryption keys are we going to use, initialization vectors on various crypto, how long the key should last, et cetera. And there's an index into the database of different security associations that determine which things are in there through a table lookup. And you can use different ones for different connections and different machines and different sessions and other such stuff like that. Belevin, here's some of the, there's two slides of, I summarized Belevin's paper, which was a great paper where he listed, you know, the ESP provides confidentiality and the authentication provides authentication integrity and non-repudiation. You know, like, I didn't send that stock certificate. No, it's failures. We need to have, he pointed out there's failures. You could have encryption broken. You could have spoofing attacks. You could read encrypted data, because if you send, a telnet session is one character at a time, so you encapsulate one character in a packet. So if you know if it's the same host key, if everybody's using the same keys to go back and forth with different initialization vectors. He shows it. Fragmentation attacks. If you haven't read Tom Patak's paper on evasion and insertion attacks, I think it's through NAI, that's firewalls can be brought around through fragmentation attack. We can use fragmentation attack and ruin about everything. Session hijacking. All these problems. I mean, IPsec is supposed to solve all these, but there's still plenty of thing out there. But for defense, let's see how we're going to help solve some of this. You know, we want to have, you don't want to have just encryption without integrity, because you can change anything in there and read it. You want to have per user, you want to have different keys per that. You don't want to have, you want a, just a general overall attack that people use. Sometimes is they'll send them a plain text and they'll encrypt something back, like give an error message, or you'll send something in cipher text and they'll send it back in plain, they'll send an error message in plain text. You want to have, because then that helps you with the cryptanalysis, which is not my expertise, but plain text to plain text and cipher text to cipher text. That's what you want to do. DNS, I'll talk about DNS later, because that's going to have to be changed with all this. It'll have to be added on. No longer will you be able to send an IP address and get back a 32-bit number. DNS security, there's a separate working group, DNSSEC, on that, where your DNS stuff will be that. And that's some neat stuff to be able to try to hose your DNS servers. Okay, so in summary, for IPsec, that is, we have... The IETF has standards coming out. IPsec has been around. You can do that. You can split the headers for restricted countries, like I was saying, if you just want authentication. Sometime now, this my main, when I went to IETF, it's a catch-all for all other things. Well, we'll just stick IPsec on there, or we'll figure out security later. Let me just design a protocol, a routing protocol or a mobile protocol. And... You know, that would work, but we're sticking security on as an afterthought, and you can't do that. You cannot stick security on as an afterthought. You've got to build it in. You know, when the Internet was developed, security was an afterthought, and look where that's leading us. They're trying to say authentication header for everything, you know, go with that. There's the key distribution protocols. How do we do key exchanges? You know, if everybody's doing authentication, now there's keys flying everywhere. If there's keys flying everywhere, how do you distribute this through 128 bits and many places out there? These problems some have been fixed, but every new protocol is going to have problems, and they'll come out with it at some point. All right, by where? IPv6, where's the support? Where's the beef here? We're now having a new resource record in DNS. If you're not familiar with DNS, there's A records for addresses and H info and other such stuff. Go read the RFC. But they're going to return quad A records for 128 bits because their addresses are now four times as long. And for reverse lookup, that's how you get the name from the number, IPv6.int domain classes. There are different domain classes to go backwards. It's kind of the same thing we did, but the new domain class. DNS, you know, I said something about renumbering, where if I go from there to here, from the East Coast to the West Coast, that's, you know, I get a new IP number. DNS needs to know now where my new number is, so that if anybody wants to send me addresses, if I have a mail server set up, it needs to know where to send it. So DNS needs to know where the new renumbering is, and DNS needs to be renumbered. So they're working on DNS. There's the IPNG working group. is in the IETF, and they've set out all these RFCs. And if you go to IETF.org and look through them, that's actually where the Internet, if anybody doesn't realize, that's where the Internet protocols are developed, that people from all over get together and they get in working groups. It's a volunteer organization. And if you're interested in a certain protocol, you follow their mailing list. They have discussions, and they have meetings about three times a year, and they discuss these protocols. And if rough working code and rough consensus is they try to get the code work two different implementations, and that's how protocols are developed. That's how the new IPv6 is going to be developed. So if you have any problems with protocols or want to get involved in it, just go to IETF.org and check it out. But people are putting it into place. Site operators are putting it into place at different universities. They've got IPv6 network within the university, so you're able to tack in and have islands. And it's starting to come around. It's a very flexible protocol, but things still need to come around. There's still problems out there. What happens if we have a socket and all of a sudden the machine changes addresses? Well, that's a problem. The address renumbering, hopefully it will be able, that's why you have, it's kind of like when they first created stoplights, they had red and green, and that was it. And so you'd go and all of a sudden, boom, it would turn red and people would have tons of accidents. So they said, well, we should have a yellow light so we could, you know, have that kind of the tri-level buffer. So the same kind of thing here with the preferred length of how long it's going to be around versus valid. So you know, I'm past the time. This thing is going to renumber soon. I need to renumber soon. Here's another problem. Remember those colons? If you ever do different addresses in HTTP and you go, well, here's my, you know, CNN.com colon port 1026 for a new protocol in there or a new page or whatever. How does it know where to parse it? So they're still working on stuff like that. So there's plenty of because right there I intended the address to be 3FFE2800000 all the way down to A and port 8080. But yeah, you could probably pick the last colon, but then if you went to the last colon, then if the address like that was supposed to be 3FFE2800000A:8080, then it wouldn't be able to tell which it is. Huh? Differentiating character. I don't know how they're solving that, but that's just the general problems, and they're still working on stuff.
Is there some reason they switched to colon? Like, did they just keep a dot?
I have no idea. People decided that they wanted colons, I guess, in the IETF, and they went with that. I don't know. Yeah, it could be. I mean, it could. Just different ways of addressing, and I don't know why they did that, but it's the way it's done with different addresses. The MAC address is also colons. Well, the MAC address, you actually just take it and they split it apart and stick it in there. And the MAC has colons, but it's like six different sections of 8 bits each, you know, 6 different bytes, and they flip that apart. I don't know whether they did that or not, or whether they like colons, or whether they're going to change it to a different separator, put semicolons or backslashes or whatever. You know, why didn't we just keep, why did MS-DOS put backslashes instead of slashes? I mean, you know, we'll come around to figuring out a way to get around these things. But there's still problems, and it's still out there. But when is it coming? I mean, people ask me, it's like, well, IPv6 will never make it because there's IPv4, and none of the NOCs will want to switch, and none of the ISPs will want to switch. Well, when the whatever the new IANA is says, sorry, you can't get any more IP addresses, deal with it, and people want more servers, and they start putting everything on the Internet, from the Palm Pilots to your microwaves to the dishwashers, that, you know, you're going to run out of addresses, and something is going to break soon. Yeah? Network address translating for those is the ability to stick a box on your site and say, okay, coming in here, this looks like one big machine. But when you come in, it switches the addresses and figures out, well, actually, it's going to the mail server here, or it's going to this one right here. And when you call out, the NAT knows that box A in this site is talking to somewhere over here. So when it comes back in, it knows the same session of the packet and knows to go back to A versus B versus C. Yes, that's doable, and that's one of the midterm solutions. But first of all, if you have a site, you're now creating a bottleneck unless you stick multiple NATs. If you stick multiple NATs, then there's a problem of which side it comes in and how do you route it back. So you start getting bottlenecks into the NATs, and so that becomes a problem. I've read a few papers. I did a report on NATs last year. They're neat, and they're, you know, because if you're only given one IP address, you can try to make that out, but, you know, it's a temporary solution. Yeah. Sometimes it does. Yeah, I mean, it's a temporary hack, but it's not going to be the long-term solution. Yeah.